Welcome to The Workplace, a podcast by Cal Chamber. I'm Erica Frank, Cal Chamber's Executive Vice President of Legal Affairs and General Counsel. Our podcast today is about men and the Me Too movement. As more publicity is being given to incidents of sexual harassment around the country, men have responded to news stories and other developments in a variety of ways. For example, some have said they will no longer meet privately with female colleagues or socialize with women coworkers to protect themselves from the possibility of being wrongfully accused of harassment. We're here today to talk about this and other aspects that come under the category of the quote-unquote fallout of the Me Too movement. With me is Jennifer Shaw, president of the Shaw Law Group and a well-respected expert in employment law for more than 20 years. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Excited to talk about this topic.
A very interesting topic.
For sure.
And one that I think is maybe a surprise to some and maybe also a concern as well because of some of the unintended consequences.
Yes, one of the things with hashtag Me Too, I think, is that we all want to protect women in the workplace for sure. And what's happening is we're getting this focus on what men are doing to try to protect. I mean, that's what they're saying. But there's, like you said, this unintended consequence that I don't think people are talking about nearly enough. And we see it in our practice every day.
First, let me back up and bring everything into perspective, because the Me Too movement, which started around October 2017, has had a huge impact, both positively and in some areas, a little bit of a negative impact.
Yes.
And we previously recorded a podcast that talked about the impact the Me Too movement had on the legislature. And as you know, we saw a lot of laws come out last year. One of the laws that we focused a lot on was the new training requirement. So today, let's talk about how the Me Too has impacted the workplace. And as we talked about just a minute ago, how men are reacting to it. So tell me a little bit about what you've seen in your practice.
Well, we provide advice and counsel, investigations, and training services to public and private sector employers. So one of the things that's really interesting for us is we have had hashtag Me Too affect all three of those practice areas. So on the advice side, we get calls all the time from clients who are trying to figure out, what am I supposed to do every day? How am I supposed to deal with it? What does hashtag Me Too mean for me? How am I supposed to behave? So for example, I had a call from a CEO who told me, Jennifer, to protect myself and the organization, I'm no longer going to travel with my female executives. I said, what are you talking about? Well, I have a female marketing manager. She's actually an executive vice president. I used to take her to pitches. I don't want to be accused of doing anything I wasn't supposed to do with her. So I think it's better if she does pitches by phone, and then I can take her assistant, who of course happens to be a male. And he thinks this all is a fabulous idea.
And why would he think this is a fabulous idea?
Because I think what he's afraid of is that the pendulum has swung so far on hashtag Me Too that he's going to be falsely accused, or that he would somehow put his female executive in an uncomfortable situation. So rather than trying to sort of address that head on, he's decided, okay, let's just not do it. Let's just not go there. It sort of reminds me when we first had all the sexual harassment regulations and training about 10 years ago, people were calling me saying, I'm canceling my holiday party. I don't want anyone to accuse me of sexual harassment, so we're not going to have a holiday party. So actually, you can have a holiday party and not get accused of sexual harassment. I think you can also take your EVP of marketing to a pitch and not get accused of harassment.
What are some of the concerns, though, aside from the fact that you're missing out on perhaps training your EVP of marketing or working collaboratively with your EVP of marketing? What are some of the downsides legally from that?
Well, what I told him, and I tend to be a little direct on these types of issues, but I said, you're going to get sued for discrimination. He said, what are you talking about? I'm doing this to avoid a lawsuit. I said, well, take a step back. You're going to no longer take her to a pitch. Therefore, she's not getting the FaceTime with your very important clients. I mean, this is a Fortune 50 company, right? It matters. A lot of her compensation is based on what deals she closes. And instead, you're going to let her male subordinate have those opportunities. So do you think she might feel like she's missing out? Well, that's not my problem because I'm protecting the company. You're not, though. Because you're pretty much handing her a beautiful discrimination claim, all wrapped up with a nice red bow on a silver platter. So let's think about another approach to this.
So what would be another approach?
Well, one of the things to think about that works, I think, most of the time is just direct communication. Listen, hashtag me too has changed how we do things around here. Are you still okay with traveling with me? Is there anything I'm doing that is bothering you or making you uncomfortable? People don't ever want to ask the question. You know, I once had someone say to me, well, I'm afraid of what the answer might be. Well, let's figure out what the answer is, right? I mean, let's just figure that out now. So that's one thing we could do is just communicate. The other thing is to make sure that all of the reporting mechanisms in the organization are wide open. I mean, one of the things that's ironic is when you get a higher level person who has a complaint against a super high level person, they don't always know where to go, right?
That's so true.
So sometimes you got to bring a board into it. You've got to have some sort of ombudsman. You know, you've got to have some way where they can have that dialogue because it's not always comfortable to have it face to face.
So speaking along those lines, when we're talking about the complaint process that an employer has, is it important for the complaint process to have a variety of avenues for employees to utilize if they want to come forward or if something's upsetting them? Or they want to lodge a complaint against somebody.
Yes, I really think from a legal perspective, it's not only a good idea, it's critical. Because in California, we have a claim for a failure to prevent harassment. And the number one way to become liable for that is if you don't train your people and you don't have an appropriate complaint process. So I understand the thought of if we only list one person, then that one person will get all the complaints and will be super organized and the world will be small. Makes sense, right? But what if that person is the problem? What if I had a prior career with that person? I'm not comfortable. What I think is so critical is that we take a step back and say, all right, we're not trying to restrict the number of people or the way they come forward. We want to encourage them. How do you encourage them? Give them options at all levels. Give them internal, give them external, like a hotline.
Mm-hmm.
Just create as many avenues as you can. And then, of course, the great legal part of that is, if they choose not to use any of those avenues, I guess it really wasn't that big of a deal, right? That's a great argument we can make as defense lawyers. If you only give them one option, hard to make that argument.
So that's interesting that you say from a legal perspective that a defense attorneys can argue, well, I guess it wasn't that big of a deal, but should employers be taking that same perspective if they know perhaps through the rumor mill or, you know, it's sort of like, well, that's just Joe,
right,
you know, or that's just Kelly. Can they take that approach? Well, you know what? We've got this process and nobody has actually come forward. So our defense attorneys can handle that.
Such a great question.
Uh-huh.
All right. So here's the thing. I always tell clients, there's what you should do prospectively, prophylactically to prevent a problem. And there's what you argue when you're already in the problem, when the complaint has already been filed,
mm-hmm,
right?
Right.
So we feel really good about saying if the complaint has already been filed, look, you should have come forward. In fact, we have legal affirmative defenses. We have the McGinnis decision. We have the Title VII cases from the U.S. Supreme Court, right? The Farragher case and the Ellerth case. So we've got a lot of room where we can maneuver there. On a preventive standpoint, absolutely not. I don't want you to say the complaint must be in writing. It must be on goldenrod form 28. It must be only filed between the hours of 10 and 2. We want to be as open as we possibly can. And part of what we talk about in training that I think is so important with these folks is the idea of being an upstander, not just a bystander, not knowing that it's happening, but not doing anything about it, but actually taking some affirmative responsibility and realizing, hey, this is my workplace. Maybe it's not happening to me. Maybe no one complained, you know, formally, which is a big misnomer. I don't think there's any difference between formal and informal complaints, right? So you're absolutely right, Erica. We need to create an environment where people can speak up in any number of ways that they are comfortable doing.
So turning back to the situation and the topic today as far as the impact Me Too has had on the workplace, and in some respects, it is that, look, we know we have a duty as employers to prevent harassment. And sometimes the easiest way to prevent something is to avoid it happening altogether, which then creates all of these other issues. And I think that's what's happening, at least anecdotally and through some surveys that are demonstrating that a lot of male executives and even male colleagues are really nervous about how to handle or how to interact with their female either subordinates or colleagues.
Well, you're 100% right. And one of the things I like to tell people is, look, all you can do is make sure you are impeccable. that you're doing exactly what you should be doing. If somebody wants to make a claim about you, it's going to get figured out, right? We do these investigations and people say, well, how do you know who's telling the truth? It's usually pretty obvious, to be honest with you. You know, one story makes sense, the other one doesn't. We rarely have that much trouble figuring out what's actually going on. So from our perspective, it is so important for those male colleagues and male coworkers not to create trouble for themselves, which is what they're really doing. And of course, aside from a legal issue, they're missing the benefit of this great colleague who they used to work with, right? It just doesn't make sense.
Right, right. And I think that that's a really big part where people are so concerned and scared, rightfully so. There's been a lot in the news. And of course, too, to remember that the things that we hear about on the news are egregious. They're horrible. They've been going on for a long time. And to your point, if you are an upstander, if you're doing what you should be doing, you've got your integrity, you are playing by the rules, so to speak.
Yes.
Whatever happens, happens, you know that you could stand by what actually happened. And oftentimes, there's always this concern of, well, can I get sued? And you can tell me if I'm wrong in saying this, but in California, anybody could get sued for almost anything. It doesn't take much, a couple $100 to file a complaint, and we're off to the races.
That's exactly right. And so we focus more on, if you were sued, what's your defense, right?
Right.
Well, my defense is no one's going to ever be able to say that I sent them an inappropriate email. No one's ever going to be able to say that I refused to take a colleague to a meeting because I didn't know if I could sit next to her on the airplane. The airplane might be a time when we can really prep for the meeting, but if I say, well, I'm going to sit in aisle 12 and you should sit in aisle 14 so nobody thinks anything's going on, well, there goes our prep time.
And actually, do you think that just this notion of I'm going to sit on aisle 14 and you're going to sit in aisle 21 so that nobody thinks that anything is going wrong actually raises a level of concern?
Absolutely. It doesn't make any sense. Why aren't you sitting with Jennifer? Is something wrong? Are you two not getting along right now?
Right, right. I could see that creating problems. And one of the things that I think many people don't realize is, unfortunately, avoiding one issue, sexual harassment, opens the door to another legal issue, and that's sex gender discrimination.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I think a lot of people kind of forget about is when you talk about harassment, you're talking about conduct, right? So
yes.
It might be a joke or a comment or a picture or a poster or an email. When you talk about discrimination, it's an employment action. So my decision not to take you to the meeting, my decision to always have the door open when you're in my office, my decision that there must be a third party in my office when you're with me. But if it's a male colleague and I'm a male manager, that would just be the two of us.
Yes, exactly. And that's what I even hear, you know, at parties and cocktail hour, that men are so concerned that we're just going to keep the door open. I've never met with a female colleague without another male there or another female there. And not following the same with all of your other colleagues, your male colleagues, is going to create a huge problem.
Well, and let's just also talk about the stereotype that is there in that analysis, right?
Right.
Okay,
right.
So you're thinking that the male colleague will never accuse you of making a sexual advance to him? The world doesn't work that way.
Good point.
Right?
Right.
We have no idea who the male colleague might be attracted to. So you're really not protecting yourself at all.
So, Jennifer, in your practice areas, you know, when you have your employers and your clients come to you with these real concerns and trying to figure out how to do the right thing, how to create a workplace that's free of harassment, what are some things that you tell them? What are some tips? And I really liked your discussion about being an upstander because that's somewhat of a new phrase. We hear a lot about bystander, but we don't hear a lot about being an upstander.
Well, one of the things that we have really learned in talking about upstanders is that folks want to know what their responsibility is. Employees want to know, look, here's my job title. What am I supposed to be doing, right?
Right.
So the more you empower employees to do the right things, amazingly enough, the more they will do the right things. And let's not lose sight of the message here, right? Nobody should come to work and be mistreated. I don't care what their sex is, what their gender is, what their race or their color or their national origin. We're supposed to come to work and we're all supposed to have equal opportunity. So I don't want to lose the message of why hashtag Me Too was so important. So that's what I tell our clients. Look, we're trying to do the right thing for everyone in the workplace, but we have to always think about what are the consequences of what we're doing, right? So we talk about training. We talk about making sure that people are really aware of how the complaint process works. It's not a mystery. You know, I got called to HR. I don't know what's going on.
Right.
I don't know how to deal with it. We just believe transparency is so much more beneficial. And then, of course, if you look at people at the top, I mean, this idea of tone at the top, I mean, people talk about this all the time, but my grandmother was from the South and she used to say the fish rots from the head down. It is totally true. If we don't have it right at the top, we're never going to get it right with anyone else. So people really do have to talk the talk and walk the walk. And that's one of the reasons why I thought your topic was so interesting today, is because so many people at the top are actually getting the wrong message.
Yes. Out of fear. Out of rightfully so fear.
Totally legitimate.
Right, right.
Totally legitimate.
I think that this has really, like I said, brought this issue to the forefront, as it should, because there were a lot of horrible things that were going on and unfortunately still continue to go on. However, now it's, all right, we have realized that there's this issue out there. How is it best for us to address it without swinging the pendulum to the other side or creating all of these other issues?
Well, that's right. And one of the things that I'm worried about, honestly, is mentoring. You know, one of the things that's been so beneficial to me and my career is the mentoring I've received, both from males and females. But the men in my career have been incredible mentors. And I just can't imagine if I hadn't had that opportunity because they were afraid to be in the room with me by myself.
Right. And that goes back to the analogy of the airplane seats.
Yes.
You know, if I was that female, I think I would certainly think, what did I do? Did I do something wrong? Why is it that my mentor, and obviously people who are above us, they are our mentors in many ways. Why isn't he going to want to sit next to me? So those are practical considerations that I think is helpful for folks, everybody, whether you're a supervisor or rank and file employee, to really take a step back and really think about what's going on here. You know, if I know that I am an outstanding citizen, I don't need to have this panic that somebody's going to accuse me of something that I know that I haven't been doing.
That's exactly right. You know, there is a fear of being falsely accused. I get that 100%.
Right.
But the truth is, I rarely see that.
Okay.
What usually happens is something is getting blown out of proportion on one side or the other,
mm-hmm.
but it's rarely something that's made up out of whole cloth. So what I tell folks is you just have to be responsible for yourselves, right? And you have to be able to meet your standard of ethics and of really being an impeccable person in the work environment. By the way, it doesn't mean we won't make mistakes. We all do.
Very good point, because I think people are very scared about making a mistake.
We all make them, and we will be forgiven for them.
Yes.
If it's truly the exception and not the rule.
So it sounds to me that we're also talking a lot about respecting each other and having respect in the workplace. That this is really what this is about as well.
Well, yeah, it really is. And also understanding that respect doesn't mean we're going to agree, right?
Oh, you know, well said.
Anything
yes.
about, if we talk about politics or religion or anything that can be sort of challenging where people have very strong personal views, that doesn't mean we can't work together. So respect means how we treat each other in the process. It doesn't mean I have to convince you that I'm correct. That's where the golden rule can sometimes be a little bit misapplied. You know, it's not really about what I want. It's about what's best for this work environment.
Well, thank you so much, Jennifer. It was really appreciate you coming and talking to us today about this hot issue, and we look forward to having you again.
I would love that. Thank you so much, Erica.
And with that, thanks for joining us at The Workplace. Comments, share, and subscribe to Cal Chambers podcast at calchamber.com.